All right. Well, welcome to the Jimmy Rhodes Show. And I couldn't imagine starting this podcast without my best friend and the person specifically responsible for creating Jimmy Rhodes, an amazing runner, my best friend, my main training partner, Danton. Hey, Danton.
What's up, Jimmy Rhodes?
Yeah. So, I couldn't imagine starting this without talking to you, because like you and I started all this together 12 years ago, and I feel like our friendship even is really a creation of like the local trail scene in the mountains and all the time we've spent, not only just you and me, but just with all of our friends and meeting all the people that are in the Cats and stuff. So when I think about what we're doing for this 50K training program, it's like, oh yeah, this is like where we started, and we still can kind of remember that. Although I'm going to take you back down memory lane today a little bit. So, and Dan and I first met 20 years ago in Blacksburg, and I was there for veterinary school, and you started dating my classmate, Jenna, and I was dating her friend, Michelle. And I know you dabbled in running then. You had already run like a marathon or two, didn't you?
Yeah, I think I had run a handful of marathons while you guys were in vet school.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time running actually on the trails out at Pandapus Pond.
Yeah, that I remember that blew my mind, because I was like, oh, Jenna's dating this like runner dude. Because like when you don't do that, like I was still smoking cigarettes and drinking heavy. And I think you were still like having fun in life and partying. And you were just about to start Fire Academy. But still, I didn't think you didn't like live like running. You were just this dude that I knew because you were dating Jenna. But yet you must have like had a lot of at least some background. So that went from like high school to college to, how'd you get into like marathon running?
I was a decent high school cross country runner. I was in the low 16s for a 5K, which isn't too bad, but when I was in high school, that was maybe top 7 in a race locally. There were some really fast kids in high school. And when I went to college, I ran for enjoyment. I just kind of, you know, I ran here and there, and kind of went back and forth between lifting weights and running, and the running wasn't consistent. And when we got to vet school, or when you and Michelle and Jenna were in vet school, I picked running back up, and that's where running in the mountains developed a passion for running instead of just something that I enjoyed doing. It became something that I kind of needed to do.
Yeah, that's cool. Because I'll talk about this a little bit, but it's a little bit of a secret. Is like I would not be doing what I'm doing if you hadn't moved 5 doors down. I probably would still be doing the 10 miler like my 10th year in a row.
Or your 24 hours of mountain bike and snowshoe or something.
Yeah, not that there's anything wrong with that. And then fast forward, I think it was like 7 years after vet school, and I get this call, and you guys are like, hey, we're looking at a house 5 doors down from you, and you guys moved into our neighborhood, and we had been there just a few years, and we're out in Crozet, we can see the mountains from our house and such, and we both had little kids at that time. I guess our kids were like 2 or 3 when you guys moved
Whit
in?
Whit and Sadie were 1. Cole was 2.
Dang,
2 and a half. Yeah, they were young.
And then I think, you know, well before like trail running ultra, we were like in this phase of life where I think you just realize as a parent of young kids of like, all right, what am I doing? Am I going to start being healthy and like taking care of myself? Am I just going to ignore my health and go with a dad? So, I know it kind of started you, me, and Jeff Lysiak, and I remember doing like 3-mile runs, and that was like the whole run. And those were kind of a struggle at times. I know for me, and I know Lysiak, and you were kind of like the more experienced runner. But that was really cool because we just started like doing it. We were making up stuff. We were exploring our neighborhood. We'd run at night, and remember, like, we didn't even have like headlamps. And I think one of us upgraded to like those build hats that had these like battery-powered LED lights on the brim of the hat. So bad.
I think they were 25 lumens, and we were so impressed with the 25 lumens that we had.
Amazing. So, and then, you know, well, I'm going to ask you more about this, but we started like figuring stuff out, and over a couple years, it really led to like getting into somehow this hair of like doing this ultra marathon. And I think it was you who somehow, your dad knew David Horton. Somehow you knew who Horton was because your dad worked at Liberty, right?
Yeah. So, David Horton's wife, Nancy, worked with my dad for several years when I was really young. And on the side, my dad did TV repair work back when you would fix appliances when they broke.
Yeah.
And I remember my first interaction with David Horton was my dad repairing his TV, but being in, I think it was his mud room, and seeing a box that was about 3 foot tall, probably 24 inches by 24 inches, full of kangaroo running shoes. And I had never seen so many shoes in my life. And kangaroo shoes were very cool back then.
Oh, yeah.
So I was very impressed with his shoe collection.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. That's like, it just, it's funny how it all comes again full circle. But, you know, we started talking about that, and then all three of us, you, me, and Jeff Lysiak, signed up for the Eastern Divide 50K. Yes. And that was June of 2012. I was still figuring out my own running in my body, and I totally got a stress fracture on my foot. I was totally trying like the minimalist running stuff, five fingers, and ran myself right into a stress fracture. So you and Jeff did that, and then I was delayed like a full year. Mine was Catherine's Fat Ass 50K. That was July 2013. Your first Promised Land was in 2013, and my first Promised Land was 2014. So that was kind of it. But, you know, between the two of us, Dan and I have 90 ultra finishes.
Wow.
I counted 20 of which are Hailgate.
Nice.
And we both have Western States buckles.
Yes.
We both have Old Dominion 100 sub 24 buckles.
Yes.
And we've both done Promised Land, Mountain Mascus, Hellgate many, many times. Again, just kind of, I think, truly products of like Virginia trail running. And I think that's a great history that we share, which is relevant to like, I think, what we love passing on to like the local cats and stuff. And we've literally spent hundreds of hours and miles together on what's our favorite red?
Jarvins.
Yeah, Jarvins. Yeah.
More than hundreds, thousands of miles. It's thousands been, of hours.
It's been a lot of early morning runs and repeats and stuff. So, and yeah, and like along the way, we kind of came up with Jimmy and Danton. They're totally these like alter egos, but I think they've just been a way of like keeping running light, making fun of ourselves and other people. And, I mean, you are a professional firefighter, paramedic. You see a lot of tough stuff. I'm a veterinarian. I have my own share of stuff. So this trail running has just been this release for us. And I think, again, I don't think I could do my job as well or be as sane as I am without, like, all of the 5 a.m. runs in the mountains and stuff like that. So that's been a really big thing.
People at work have always asked, why do you run as far as you run? Because when you do a 100-mile race, the majority of people, number one, really don't care. And number two, when they do care, they're like, why would you run that far? That
yeah.
doesn't make sense. It's mind-blowing. And, you know, my response to them is, you know, a lot of people take Xanax or medications for depression or anxiety or stress relief. Being in the mountains and running was my medication or my therapy. And, you know, having someone like you to run with, where we just talk back and forth and we have those, you know, personal conversations and sometimes, you know, the conversations that you're not going to have anywhere outside of being on a run with someone that you're very close with, that you can trust. It was my outlet.
Yeah.
Always has been.
Amen. Likely. Like when I am on my deathbed, like I'm going to go back to, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the next 10 years or 20 years with running and stuff. But like the past decade plus that we've had is like so good. So good. Just really quick for the purpose of this podcast, coming back to like people who don't know who the heck we are and don't care about any of this, it's our introduction to the CATS 50K training program. This is the ninth year of this program where basically we put out a training plan really geared to people who have never run an ultra and we have weekly volunteer-led training runs, and it leads up to our goal race, which is the famous Promised Land 50K, which has been going on for, I think, 20-some years, by David Horton. It takes place on Saturday, April 26th. It is an awesome, beautiful mountain ultramarathon, 34 miles.
It's not my favorite 50K, but it is the most beautiful 50K I have ever run. My favorite 50K is Terrapin.
Yeah.
I think that time of year, it's still a little more winter, and I'm a winter runner.
Yeah.
But Promised Land, you could not ask for a prettier course.
Yeah.
It is stunning.
And I think when you think of a race where you have, like, the finish line reward and the hangout, like, you go back to a race like Promised Land in the fall and, like, Masochist in the winter, but, like, Promised Land where those nice days in late April when you're sitting out at the camp is just awesome. So, and with this, in short, we're going to release a training plan, which it's like a lower mileage training plan, and it's worked out pretty well. Like, we have a pretty high rate of people who do that and finish, and the goal is trying not to, like, beat people up. Jim Hughes will be organizing the weekend training runs, and we will explore places like Jarman's, Sugar Hollow, the AT. So even if you don't want to do Promised Land, I think if you don't know these places and you want to learn these routes and kind of some of the loopage that's around, like, that alone is worth it. And we do it just as a CATS volunteer basis. And there's a lot of people at different speeds. Jim Hughes proudly props up the back of the pack. So I hope anyone listening will not feel afraid to come out, because it's like there's plenty of power hiking going on.
You won't be left behind.
Yeah, totally. And so we've often done this kickoff meeting at, like, a bar or something, and there's always, you know, so many people can't make that. So hence this podcast of just trying to do a few episodes. I'm going to have Sophie Spidell. She's kind of my partner in crime with the 50K training program, as well as Jim, and we'll probably get other people on and such, and just probably do a few more short episodes on, like, gear, nutrition, kind of about the race and things that hopefully are very local and you can just put in your earbuds on, like, a morning run and get a little bit more information. So, so I could go on and on, but I think conversations are still, like, the best way of, like, taking an info. So Danton, I said 10 questions, but I think it's 11 because I didn't count very well. So we're going to just go through some of these and then I'll kind of wrap up. So, we kind of hit on some of these, but do you have any, like, a memory or a couple memories of our pre-ultra running days that kind of stick out to you?
I think the first time that you and I went up Jarman's together with Jeff Lysiak, we went up Jarman's down Mormon's, and we went to Sugar Hollow and back.
Yes.
And that's probably in the 20-mile range, and it was a nice, relaxed pace, and we were dressed like maybe road runners or CrossFitters, and we had the best time. We were so proud, and we took pictures and had an absolute blast. Pre-ultras, running in the snow, golf course running at night, in Old Trail, when we would get together, we would start our runs at like 8:30, 8:45 at night, because we had just finished putting our kids to bed and reading stories. And, you know, I remember we'd go out, we'd run for an hour, hour and a half. I'd get home and, you know, I'd have to get up at 5 o'clock to go to work. And, you know, I would be, my heart rate would be up enough after the run that it would take me, you know, several hours to cool down, shower, and fall asleep. I just remember, you know, late night running at first, and then transitioning to the early morning running, as we started to dabble into the longer distances.
Totally. And man, I remember that run to Sugar Hollow, because we were totally, like, so excited and geeked out about just exploring that new place. I even have pictures I'll come across every once in a while. We were, like, taking pictures of each other running through some of those creek crossings and the Mormons. And then we have a picture we took at the dam.
Yes.
And it's you, me, and Lysiak. Yes. And that's from that run. So, again, just like the spirit of, I think, when you did this like really long run that you haven't done in kind of a new trail or something. Yeah, that was great. And totally like the figuring out the time of running. And I think that's so relevant for people picking this up because like, again, we've always, I think if we've done one good thing is like our whole kind of men's group of running, we've always put a lot of pressure on like, we're not going to be those people, those dads who are like, out until 2 p.m. on Saturdays and like we're gonna get our stuff done and try to do it when nobody needs us. And initially that was like, yeah, at like let's put the kids to bed, read them a story, almost falling asleep in bed, and then it's like, hey man, meet me at 8:30 and we go for a run, and then we're so like wide awake, and then we cook, you know, dinner after that, and then that really transitioned to these early morning things where that same kind of thing. Nobody needs us at 5 a.m. So, hey, why not just wake up early and do the day? Which is, like, totally... Now I'm on that schedule for life, I think. So, your first ultra, Eastern Divide 50K. Do you remember a little bit about that and kind of how that went?
Oh, absolutely. Number one, my shoe choice was horrific. I was wearing a pair of really lightweight running shoes, almost like racing shoes. And maybe 15 to 20 miles into the event, I realized if I'm going to do this again, I had better do a little research and find shoes that are a little more appropriate. It was my first introduction to steep hills in a race. Although Jeff and I, we kind of hung out together during the race, and we were not very fast. My biggest memory is as we were finishing, two ladies, I'm guessing maybe early to mid 60s, passed me and Jeff and you know, gave us some words of encouragement. And Jeff and I kind of looked at each other and were like, we're not very good at this.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I also remember, later in the day, again, I had a stress fracture I couldn't join, and you guys sent me this video where you guys had just recorded yourselves climbing up a hill. And we're basically like, fuck you, Anderson. You
were we were talking a little smack.
Oh, yeah. You guys were having a rough go. And the Eastern Divide no longer happens, but it was outside of Blacksburg.
Yeah, so it's also Mountain Lake Hotel went up, started at the Cascades.
Yeah.
And you went by Big Cascade, Little Cascade. That was the start of the race. So similar to what you will see at Promised Land, you're going to start the race with a climb.
Yeah.
And you know, I think most mountain ultras in Virginia, you're going to start low, and very early on you're going to have to get up into the mountains, which means you know you're going to have 5 to 6 miles of climbing to get there.
Yeah. And you used to work at Mountain Lake way back in the day.
I did.
So what did you think about, like, here's this is a race where you used to kind of live and even work, and now you're doing this crazy big loop on foot? Like, that's kind of this different way of like being in a space, right?
I was pretty familiar with a lot of the trails. I'd been on them from my time living in Blacksburg because I loved to hike. And then when I worked at Mountain Lake, I was the recreation director. So I used to have to take families on hikes throughout the property. So I was familiar with a lot of it. You know, thinking back, the one of the funniest memories of that race was at the finish. And, I didn't know this was a thing. I think we were probably 30 miles into the race. And at this point, the only thing I could think of is I just want to sit down. I want to be done. And you could hear the finish line and the cowbells and the cheering. And you ran right past the finish line. You could see it. And you could see the people. And you're like, I'm here. And it wasn't there. You had to run past it another mile and turn around and come back. And that was so heartbreaking. But now I'm kind of, you know,
yeah,
that's just how it is.
Yeah, a little more used to
that. It's kind of
like
when you're finishing at Grindstone or on the old course, you know, you can hear that finish line, but you still had a few miles.
You're not there yet. No. That's awesome. Do you remember training for that? Like, did you have like a plan? Were you like totally making it up? Like, do you even remember where you were grabbing some of your ideas for that particular race?
So Jeff and I trained for that together a lot, and we had zero clue what we were doing. The majority of our training was done on the road, but mm-hmm. it was done on either the Parkway or Skyline Drive. Mm-hmm. So we were getting tons of elevation, and we were getting some pretty good, you know, fast runs in, but what we weren't doing was the technical running. and I found at Eastern Divide, my ankles and my knees and my stabilizer muscles, my hip flexors, were not used to the varying terrain that you're going to come across in the mountains. And after that, I realized I need to spend more time dedicated to running on trails than running on the road.
Yeah, yeah, gotcha. Because I know you've always done a lot of training, but that's interesting. Yeah, again, I couldn't quite remember what you guys were doing for that. So
we had no clue. Every once in a while, we would do a run in the mountains, and we would just look at a map and be like, let's go check this trail out. And we started running into some of the early cats on some of their group runs. And I think they just started calling us the Crozet guys or something like that. And it would just be random, you know, running into Bob Clouston or Sophie out there. And then they're the ones who actually told me and Jeff about the cats.
Yeah.
And so they started telling us about other races in Virginia through David Horton.
Yeah.
And the Lust series and the Beast series. And so we started doing a little more research into those races. And when we started to dabble into those races, we realized very quickly we need to get on the trails.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I can remember just going back to like meeting some of these cats peoples. Again, it was great. You know, we didn't know anybody. And I remember a big day was when we did the Harry Landers run. And I'm pretty sure that was the first time I met Sophie, and AJW is there. And I can't remember, maybe Neil Gorman, but I know that we all like met beforehand. And then we did that big run, which was another like huge exploration of a loop we had never really done. And then kind of hanging out afterwards. And that was definitely the start of this, like, oh, we just expanded our community of friends. And very quickly, like you said, someone's telling us about this loop or that race or that trail. And I feel like that's one of those moments that really started like the growth of like, oh, there's all this stuff out there and there's all these people out there. So yeah, just another really great part of like getting into like trail running, because you just meet those people and you learn so much more.
That was so influential. A couple things I remember about that day. That turned into a foot race.
Yes, it
towards
did.
Towards the end. I think AJ was in his fine tuning for Western States.
Yeah.
You and I, we didn't know anything about Western States at that time. We probably would have referred to it as Western instead of States. And there were some really talented runners there. And the first half was moderate. And then the second half, the lead group took off. And you and I were with that lead group. And I think we had something to prove that day, or at least we felt we had something to prove. And we ran really, really hard. And that was the first time that I thought, I was like, you know, I think I could enjoy racing as opposed to just running.
Yeah.
And then the group hangout afterwards was second to none. Hanging, and there was a big group that day. I think there was 50 plus people out there. And I think everyone stayed afterwards just to hang out and chat and talk running.
I have this memory of that run when you're on the AT south from the Wildcat kind of parking lot, and you're basically coming down into Turk Gap parking, and there's this one section of the AT and it does a couple of these switchbacks. And I remember, I think, yeah, the people we were with were in like AJW was just running so fast. And I can still remember seeing your face on one of these switchbacks. And our hands were like in the air. We were running as fast as we can. And we made this eye contact of like, what the hell's going on? And we were like, I don't know, keep running. And we were just trying to keep up. But again, just another really fun time of like, oh my gosh, like this is kind of cool. Like we're running far. We're in this big distance that we normally don't do with these people that are like running way above our pay grade. And yet we're really just enjoying the heck out of it, even if we were suffering.
It was so much fun.
Yeah. So, do you remember any of the other gear you used to run with?
Oh, so because you, me, and Jeff didn't really have an introduction to ultra running until, you know, we had discovered a little bit of on our own, we had to purchase some gear to make it work to begin with. I started off with waist belts.
Oh, yeah.
And those were initially great. But they cause a lot of abdominal discomfort.
Yeah.
And felt like I was always trying to tighten them up so they weren't bouncing. Those were, in the end, they're horrific. some of the other early gear, Montrail running shoes that provided zero cushioning, but they did protect your feet.
Yeah.
You know, headlamps that we had to replace batteries in instead of rechargeables, and, you know, 75 lumen headlamps. You thought you had something that was really nice. Early gear was not good.
The waist packs were very memorable, and I believe these were like, you think of the ones you see now, they're so slick, but these are like huge waist packs, and you always ran with this. I think you had like a double bottle,
yes.
And it fit two hard plastic bottles, and then I think we had one that just fit like one. And oh, we would have, after long runs, like a 4-inch ulceration on our back from where those things were bouncing.
Many blisters.
Yeah, it's come a long way since then. We started running Jarmans a lot. I was actually looking at our Strava, and when it was around the end of 2012, beginning of 2013, and it was like a weekly thing we started to do. So we could talk about Jarmans like forever and ever. Do you remember though those early days of running that hill and what that kind of like was like or meant to you back then when you just didn't have as much knowledge or experience as we do now?
Yeah. You know, 6 miles round trip for, well, if you start at the bottom, if we ran from the house, you know, you'd get another 2 miles there, 2 miles back. But what I remember is that we were very proud the first time that we ran up it without stopping.
Yeah.
The first no walk. And the single trip up to Jarmans really quickly turned into, all right, let's do a double. And we were like, wow, we were so amazed at our double. And we did a triple. And I think by the time we started doing routine triples, that's where we came up with the idea of the gym. Like, we should start a race and do this 5 times. Just kind of randomly, but we spent a lot of time, and the benefits of that, and I think what we were thinking when we were doing it, is we are getting the climbing that we need to develop our legs to become ultra runners, because we had talked enough with some of the seasoned veteran cats, and they said, look, you need to get your quads hard, and to do that, you need to climb, and you need to descend. And the beauty of Jarmans is, because it's gravel, when you do descend, you don't have to worry about technical footing unless it's icy. I mean, we've all had some nasty, nasty falls on Jarmans, but for the most part, you know, you can come down quickly. And, you know, in my head, when I was coming down, at a quicker pace, I thought that I was speeding up the process of seasoning my legs, preparing my legs for racing, by coming down at a slightly faster pace than a normal jog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's funny. It's hard to like go back and remember those first like 5 or 10 Jarmans ascent. But I know it was like this strange world and this poorly, you know, made road that goes up to this, you know, no scenic views.
Well, it's
top,
a hideous but, road. Yeah. It's a beautiful road because it's the Vena Cava to the Shenandoah National Park, the Appalachian Trail. But you remember the bottom was somewhat dangerous. There was that group of pit bulls down at the bottom.
There was some real dog danger. We would always grab handfuls of rocks before we went by that first house with the pit bulls, because they would charge into the road.
Yeah, and, you know, depending on the day or the time of day, there was 3 to 5 of them. And at some point, I finally started carrying pepper spray because, you know, my aim with the rocks wasn't always perfect. And, you know, you only had 1 or 2 attempts to try and turn that dog around. You know, Jarmans is a very special place. And, you know, I think of all the routes that we have done, you know, hundreds of times, Jarmans is probably the one that stands out the most.
Yeah, that's the one. We've done it a lot. You've run a lot of ultras, and your last one was Old Dominion.
Yes.
That was in 2022, a 20-hour and 52-minute sub-24, and this is the Old Dominion 100, second oldest 100-miler. Wonderful Virginia race, really challenging summer heat. It happens in June. Your training for that, you had one long run of 19 miles And then you had one 13-miler, and the rest were all 10 and 11 miles was the longest. And that's going back literally like the entire 4 or 5 months before that. How can you do that versus the bigger mileage when you were really in your fastest shape, when we would just try to beat each other all the time, and you were just, you had such good like training volume. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that, on how here you are a decade later having this amazing race, despite the fact that your mileage is so much lower?
A couple things. I had a base, you know, I had a decade of running underneath my belt. And the reason that I was doing the 10-mile runs was, you know, I think I was recovering from a series of some surgeries and also work. And so you and I were getting our 10-mile run in every morning. But we were consistently running 10 miles 5 days a week with a mix of steady climbing, steady descending, a lot of trail, a lot of really hard power hiking. So if we were hiking, it was hands on knees. And then I also benefited from some spectacularly cool weather that year.
Yeah.
I know at the finish you were wearing a puffy and you had a stocking cap on. It was downright cold that night. So I benefited from a June weather pattern that came through that gave me spectacular weather. But the biggest thing is I had learned how to run properly. And the same thing kind of happened out at Western States. I said, I'm going to go out slow intentionally. I'm going to let all these people go. And then, you know, I'm going to run my race instead of trying to race at the front. And it just happened to be that one day I had the perfect pace to start with. And I essentially was able to maintain that exact same pace for 100 miles. And it worked out well. You know, my legs never died on me. I felt great the entire time.
Yeah.
You know, I was 3 miles from beating Olivier LeBlanc, you know, who yeah. is the Crozet Des,
yes.
You know, nemesis. You know, one day one of us is going to get yeah. him at Old Dominion.
But yes.
I thought I had him that year. I remember leaving one of the aid stations and looking at you being like, are we ahead of Olivier? And you're like, I think we are. It was just a magical race. And, you know, honestly, another thing too was I had the right people out there crewing me. You were out there and Sophie was out there. You brought me some Egg McMuffins, I believe,
yeah.
to eat. And they were fantastic. I was drinking Coca-Cola the entire time. It was just, you know, it was one of those days where everything just felt great. And my mind was in the right spot. And then when you picked me up to pace, what is that mile? It's like a 12-mile
section.
It's like
75 to 85. And then, yeah, I forget exactly the mileage. So 12 miles or so, you're right.
We had fun. We laughed the entire time. You know, I don't think I was in a bad mood. You didn't have to work to be like, all right, let's get Spearin's head in the right spot. We just were enjoying the moment. You knew at that point that I was going to go sub 24. And I had never gone sub 24 in yeah. 100. And it was a goal, and I think we both realized, hey, look, this is going to happen. And you were so happy for me. I was so happy for me. And we just had an absolute blast.
Yeah. You know, that's like such a great microcosm of, I think, for people who are, like, looking at, toying with the idea of, like, oh, my God, running, like, a 50K, like, 30 miles, 34 miles. Like, that's so daunting. But, you know, and 100 milers, like, again, don't go there for a while. Don't even think about that. But they're a good example of, like, how training to keep your body healthy, and then just as important as just having this really good mindset on race day, I think those of us who have done it a lot just really realize, like, literally the power of this, like, a good pace, going out slow, eating lots of food, and staying positive can let you do things that are far beyond what you think. And especially when you're doing them and you're around people who are like 15 years older than you, they don't look like you, they weigh 100 pounds more than you. That's one of the cool things about the ultras, especially 50Ks, is when you finally get out there and you realize there's all these people, they're having fun, they're relaxed, it quickly puts people in a good mindset. And all of a sudden, you know, forget about being, you know, competitive and running a, you know, a 20-hour, 100-mile race, but, like, finishing Promised Land as an example where you may feel like you don't have any business doing that because you haven't done long runs or something. It's like, yeah, if you can take that type of positive attitude, eating and having fun, like, it's amazing what people can do. So I love sharing those types of stories because it's huge. And one day you have to do it to know, and then people look back like, oh yeah, that is right. It is mental. So I can remember the first Promised Land we did together, and this was your second one, but I remember we had like this terrible night's sleep in tents. We camped there as many people do, and I don't know, I think there was just people making noise and stuff. And then yeah, we finished like 4 minutes apart, and I just remember that was a really awesome day, awesome race, tough course. Do you remember like any memories of your first Promised Land specifically? This is the one that you did with just Jeff, and not, I wasn't even there because I was injured still.
You know, I have a couple of really great memories of Promised Land, so some of them kind of blend together. I think the strongest memory that stands out in my mind is the climb up Apple Orchard. Right? Is that the name of the falls?
Yeah, Apple Orchard Falls.
That it, not only is it absolutely drop-dead gorgeous, but that's, I think, 22 miles or so into the race when you're at the bottom of that and you start that climb. And thinking my legs are absolutely shattered right now and I've got to go up this hill. And there's a couple false summits as you climb up. Yeah. Because, you know, once you pass the falls, you still have...
You're still going up.
Yeah, there's still a lot of climbing to go. But that's what stood out in my mind was mile 22 to the finish. There's a lot of uphill and then there's a lot of downhill. In that first year, the downhill was very slow. I think we were walking at times.
Probably,
you know, yeah. Our legs were so shattered. And then, you know, some of the memories from years after that when I went from just trying to run it to race it is how hard you could run those downhills towards the finish. And, you know, you can really, you know, make up some good time there. But, you know, when you're a beginner, you're going to be walking some of those downhills. There's no ultra runner out who has not walked a downhill section, and you're shaking your head thinking, why am I walking right now? But you're walking because your legs are, they're tired, they're shattered. And it takes, you know, a year or two, I think, of really steady training to get to the point where you can run an ultra from start to finish where you don't really do much walking. Or if you do walking, it's of the power hiking. And, you know, so for the beginner runner, they shouldn't be focused on that. They should be focused on finishing. Yeah. I just want to finish this race because the elation comes from the accomplishment. It is the overwhelming sense of pride and joy and relief when you see the race director, or, you know, David Horton at the end with his megaphone yelling at you, celebrating your finish, which I know my finish, I don't even know. Do you know what my first Promised Land time was?
I think your first one was like 6:20 or something like that. So yeah, good.
But you know, several hours slower than the people up front.
Yeah.
And getting the same elation, if not maybe even more, from Horton at your accomplishment finishing several hours back from the folks up front. You know, the mid packers or the mid to back of the packers. But it's the sense of accomplishment when you finish is what you should be focused on, you know, as a beginner. Runner.
Even now, I just ran Promised Land again, this year, 2024. And like, yeah, running down that hill, whether you're in good running shape or not, whether you got years on your belt or not, you're just so done and so tired and you're going down this hill. It's flattening out. So now you have to use more muscle. And man, that right hand turn into camp is like one of the best feelings in the world because you turn right, you can hear Horton yelling at people on the megaphone, and you finally come around the little bathhouse and you just see this finish line. And there's always so many people and food and all this stuff. And you know you're about to get to stop running.
Yes.
But to have that as like one of your first ultra experiences, like there's nothing better than that. And coming in, and you're right, you know, David Horton is a race director of that. Even if you just met him, you could just get this sense that like, he'll give you a hard time or something, but he's really happy for you to finish. He's really happy when people suffer.
It's so genuine.
And finish. It's so genuine. He loves to see people, like, have a rough time and then successfully finish stuff. I don't think there's anything that makes him any happier than that. So you like answered some of the questions I have. So you've had some pretty serious back issues. You've had a number of back surgeries, which have really hampered your running. I mean, I've been with you through all of that, and you've had a lot of, you know, years where you haven't been able to run. You've had to recover and stuff, and even now you've got a lot of issues related to that that make running a lot less comfortable than I can even really understand. So there's always this question of, like, why are you still doing this, man? Like, and you kind of answered it a little bit before, but, like, maybe I'd like to say, like, you have any thoughts on, like, how you're able to keep doing it despite a lot of these challenges, which are mental as much as physical? And then, you know, we were just talking recently, and we're talking about goals for this year, and you were telling me about some of your races and stuff. So any thoughts on, like how do you keep wanting to do this despite the fact that your body is, like, struggling with this battle of, you know, injury versus wanting to get out there and move?
It's taken a while to adjust from the mindset of I used to race to now I'm just going to go out there and run it,
mm-hmm.
have fun and enjoy it. And it's okay not to be at the front. But for me, I get out and run because that's where I get to hang out with my friends. You know, my work schedule is very busy. My home life is pretty involved. And so if I want to hang out with my friends, I know that I'm going to have to get out in the mountains to hang out with them. But at the same time, I look forward to it. You know, we start the morning off with 10 miles and, you know, 2,500 foot of climbing 5 days a week. You can't beat that. That's the best way to start the day.
Yeah.
And you know, when you do that all year, you get to see the seasons change, and that is spectacular. You know, we have a route that we call Death Star, where perhaps we do, you know, a little trespassing on the property, but
we're like deer.
We're just passing through. It's under power lines. There are no houses around. But when you get 2/3 of the way up that hill and you stop and you turn around and you can look down on Crozet and you can see out into Charlottesville and you see the stars, and you know, it's just beautiful. There's nothing like morning running. Being out there before the sun comes up, and then if you're lucky enough, you get to finish with the sun up. It's just, to me, it's a special time of day.
Yeah.
I look forward to it, and I love the banter with my friends. That's what keeps me coming back, knowing that, you know, after this run, I'm going to suffer because of it.
Yeah. 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 It's definitely hugely important, and we're very bad at hanging out outside of those morning runs. It's just the way life is. It's busy. It's family, busy. Work and stuff. So, yeah, I see that. Well, I've always admired that, you know, and it's not just like, oh, Dan's really tough, he's suffering through that. But I think it's just knowing, like, nope, this is the hangout. This is the really good stuff in life. And it's going to be worth some of the physical stuff that you're dealing with. But also just keeping a positive head despite stuff out of your control that, I don't know, like, I often think I would just be, it's terrible if I had to deal with similar challenges, because I can, like, melt down a little bit quicker with that type of stuff. So so anyway, it's inspiring, and glad we're still getting out there when time and work allows, of course. So well, that's about it. You know, I just had those questions, and I hope some of that is, again, interesting and relevant to someone just thinking of getting through this. And yeah, Dan, especially, I wouldn't be, again, the runner or the person without you, man. I mean that sincerely. And I so enjoy Dan Tan and Jimmy Rhodes getting together, writing songs, and all these stupid things we've done come from our runs together. They just come out, and, you know.
And because we got involved in ultra running.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, when I look back on it, that promised land, your first promised land, I believe when you said that we were 4 minutes apart, you beat me. And that's what inspired me to start racing. I was like, I don't want to lose to this guy.
Yeah.
I didn't like that feeling. And I had to get used to it because basically I think I've only beat you twice maybe in a race and lost to you many, many, many times. And there have been several races that we have been so close together. And afterwards, I'm just exasperated. I'm like, how could I not catch this guy? I think one of my favorite finishes was when you and I raced 1 year at Holiday Lake.
Yes.
It was a very cold year. And you finished, and I figured you were way, way ahead of me, and I think I was like 90 seconds behind you or something like that, and my face was frozen, and I sounded like I was having a stroke, and I was like, 90 seconds?
It was very close, yeah.
And I was just so devastated that I didn't catch you, but so happy for you at the same time, because you were a top 10 finisher, and I wanted a top 10 so bad, and I finished 11th that year. But that was still first Masters, so, you know, still technically a podium finish. But, you know, stuff like that, the friendships in ultra running, the community, the health benefits, the beauty of being in the mountains. I would encourage all these folks that are thinking about doing it to do it, because all it takes is saying, I'm going to get back out there again tomorrow and I'm going to run and then I'm going to train. And I'll stretch and I'm going to do the exercises that I need to do to strengthen my body and to be able to run that distance. And don't let 30 miles or 35 miles be overwhelming. Break it down, aid station to aid station. I'm going to get from here to there. I know I've got to go 6 miles. I'm going to be able to refill my bottles. I can sit down for a minute. I can change my socks. I can change my shoes. Whatever it's going to do to keep me comfortable, to keep me going. I know that I can walk. There's nothing wrong with walking in an ultra. We all do it.
Yep.
And so, you know, if you take a big race and you start breaking it down into their own little specific categories, if I can do this, then I can be successful. And if I can check this box that I did that, I can be successful. And the main thing is go out there and have some fun.
Yep. No, amen. And you can do it with little kids. You can do it and keep a good marriage. You can do it with a stressful job. Sometimes, you know, you've heard me rage driving home at like, I'm getting home at 9 o'clock. I'm so stressed from a really tough day, but it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to be there in the morning because I need to blow off this rough day tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. And by the time we get back home and it's 6:30 or 7, I'm like totally refreshed. The sleep doesn't refresh me. It's like finishing that run and it's like, okay, yesterday's behind me. I'm good. I can go in and like my job again because I just got out with you. So, all right. So with the 50K, our first training run is going to be Saturday, January 11th. I'm not sure exactly where that's going to be yet. It might involve Jarman's, but stay tuned on the Cats listserv, which you can find at the Cats website, SevilleAreaTrailrunners.org, or the Cats Facebook group. On Facebook, we'll have our information on those. So I hope you enjoyed this first episode of the Jimmy Road Show, which will probably have 3 episodes and then self-destruct. But this was awesome, man. It's always good to hang with my man Dan Spearin, Danton, and Jimmy Rhodes signing off. Until next time. All right, buddy.